Hey everybody, this is Ali Amagasu, welcoming you to the latest episode of Cloud Unfiltered. Pete Johnson is still in New York. Thank you for joining us again today, Pete. How you doing?
Hey, Ali, I'm doing all right. I managed somehow to catch a cold in the hottest week in the summer of this New York City, but I'll soldier on as long as you don't mind the like deeper baritone in my voice today.
Well, that's very brave of you. Thank you for hanging out and joining us. If you pass out during the show, we're just going to pretend that nothing happened, kind of like the last show.
Okay.
Oh, we have a terrific guest today. His name is Sriram Subramanian, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, founder and principal of Cloud Dawn. Welcome, Sriram.
Thank you, Ali. Thank you. Good morning. Good afternoon. Thank you for having me here. Hey, Pete, good to see you again since the Cloud Beers at reInvent.
At reInvent, yeah. Sriram and I, going back like three or four jobs ago, you know, if you're fortunate enough to sort of get into this set with some really smart analysts and hang out with them at bars at cloud conferences, Sriram is among these guys that really knows what he's talking about in this space. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you, so, Pete.
That's a nice way of summarizing it. If for those who are wondering, what is Cloud Dawn and what is the principle of Cloud Dawn? He's a really smart analyst.
Thank
that's
you.
Why we want his opinions. That's why we want to hear what he thinks about what's going on, you know, in the world of cloud right now. And before we get into that, however, I'd love to hear how you got into technology in the first place.
Well, getting into technology, you're asking an Indian guy and an immigrant. Like most of us, you know, I did my undergrad in computer science back in India. I did my master's in University of Cincinnati. Got into Intel and Microsoft, the standard route. But somewhere along my journey at Microsoft, I got to play with the virtualization technologies, and that got me started. That's kind of what I say is my first stepping stone towards into the cloud world. All along, though, I was fortunate enough to work in either smaller groups or really like very early stages or early phases of a particular group or a particular technology. With Intel, it was a group that was starting afresh from in Bangalore. With Microsoft, it was with a early on project on compilers, and then very early V1 of Hyper-V. So, you know, that's kind of what I liked. Being there, bringing in ambiguity, clearing up the ambiguity, bringing in clarity in the situations, and working on a very early stages of a product or a project. And literally, I was waiting to get my green card one. I wanted to venture out of Microsoft and played with some startups and stuff. And so I got here, got meaning to starting something around cloud space, something on my own, was joining as a lead developer on a cloud-based startup. We were building marketplaces for cloud services. This was like circa 2011, 2012. And right now we are talking more about multi-cloud. We're talking about choices and, you know, for players. But we were early on. We were kind of developing cloud brokerage, but we called it more of an Expedia for cloud. And being as a lead developer there, I had an opportunity to play with multiple cloud platforms, both public and private, and I really got into the OpenStack space. That's kind of what I started everything. And then I ventured out of that startup to start a company on my own, which focused on delivering private cloud solutions, primarily on OpenStack. That was the genesis of Cloud Dawn. We started as a consulting company, not as an analyst firm. But that gave me a lot of hands-on expertise, experience around how the technology works, what's cool with the technology, but more importantly, what customers want, what customers see, and what they need. And that gave me into a space where like talking and writing about cloud technologies, and that kind of pushed me into this, what do you call it, an analyst role. I personally believe that there is no space or there is less space for someone very theoretical. We need to back up. If I say something, I better have something to back it up. And I leverage my engineering background or my expertise, either playing hands-on with cloud platforms or developing some sample apps or whatnot, to make an opinion about what I say or what I think or how I see something. And I kind of validate that with my interactions with customers. So you can kind of call it between pure technologist to pure theorist, somewhere in between. That's what I am at. That's the way that I'm seeing myself as. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, good answer. I'm learning that I just need to stop asking Indian people how they got into tech.
No, no, that's fine. I think
it's a stereotype joke. It's no, so funny. The last guest said basically the same thing as far as this is just what we do.
No, no, it's fine. I may request you, like, please do keep that question because it's better to hear the answer from that person that, you know, it's a stereotype, it's a common path that we all took. There could be exceptions, you never know, right? I mean, there are maybe less, but there are immigrants or Indian immigrants who are not into programming. So I don't want to continue with that assumption that, oh, everybody is a programmer, right? It's okay I make the joke about myself, right? Rather than...
But not for me to not ask. I should not make that
right.
assumption.
So please keep that question as long as you are okay with that joke coming from the guest. So.
It does. I had no idea how deeply ingrained a thing it was.
So don't change the question to where did you get your master's?
But you did bring up a very interesting... You made a very interesting comment during that introduction. You talked about how the reason you started the consultancy was to help companies implementing OpenStack-based private clouds.
Yep.
I used to work for MetaCloud, and that's what we did. So obviously we're out of that business now. So what that made me wonder is who's doing that in the OpenStack world right now? Like, kind of who's winning that game? Who's doing interesting things with private cloud? Or have companies mostly moved to doing it DIY?
So, again, there is no like hard one answer solution to this one. But if you look at broadly, the movement, or at least the way that I see that is, the focus on private cloud is largely done in the North America region. But if you look outside the North America region, if you look at EMEA, if you look at Middle East, if you look Asia, and to an extent Australasia, there is a niche for private cloud. And when it comes to private cloud, still the choice is OpenStack. Probably, you know, there's a lot of push around Kubernetes. There's definitely a lot of push on Kubernetes, but the underlying infrastructure, the underlying control plane for cloud management is still largely OpenStack. Definitely, you see very less OpenStack only deployments where whoever is using OpenStack is either you know, focusing more on putting a Kubernetes on top of it to run more of containerized workloads, or there is a push around OpenStack plus Kubernetes, like for different kind of workloads. Very rarely you see like only OpenStack deployments, but you know, it is still true to say that there's a lots of niche market around globally for private cloud based on OpenStack. And when it comes to this, you know, it depends on, again, the statement is true not only for OpenStack. The statement is true even for Kubernetes-based or even cloud-based larger deployments, right? The expertise required for running at scale, whether it is a large-scale private cloud deployment, large-scale thousands of, multi-node clusters with hundreds of applications running on thousands of containers, or lots of applications running on public cloud, the expertise needed that is not trivial. We can get started with public cloud, we can get started with POC, with all of these things from ourselves, but when you're talking about enterprises, I am seeing a larger trend in leveraging managed clouds, managed service providers, helping them. And this trend is particularly true around outside the US. I've seen a lot of uptake outside the US. My statement, or the way I'm seeing that, is like large migrations to cloud will happen through the managed cloud service providers rather than do it yourself or service providers. That is the reason why Amazon has the managed cloud service business started 2 months ago. That is the reason why Azure, Microsoft is partnering with Accenture of the world. There's a reason why Google Cloud has identified that and establishing partnerships, right? So that's the way I'm seeing the cloud adoption will happen. And that is not only true for cloud, it's also true for private clouds and you know, Kubernetes cloud, Kubernetes infrastructure as well.
So when you said in the beginning of your statement, you said private cloud is done in North America, do you mean that folks don't need on-site in data center clouds, that it should just all be public, or was that specific to OpenStack?
No, what I was trying to say is that the mind share around private cloud has moved on. People are more receptive. Let's walk back and see, like, you know, why people needed private cloud, right? So 3 years ago for you, when you were doing MetaCloud, you must have heard about it. Like, we need the control, we need the compliance. We are scared, we are worried, right? There's a lot of discussions were around what private client can provide me, like, rather than does my workload need a private cloud, right? The questions were not from, I have this workload, what is the best place for that, right? Rather than, I need this, I need my control, I need my complaints, I can't trust a third party. Those are the reasons we are seeing less of it. People, we have a better understanding of what is the right place for the right workload, and the technical reasons are the real reasons that matter. That subset is very low, and particularly in the US, it's much, you know, there is larger trust on public cloud providers. The trust factor is low in regions like for APAC or MENA, but this trust factor is high in North America region on the public cloud service providers. And number two is also, if you tear down that the security part of it, if you focus only on, there are certain companies definitely still needing private clouds, but they are focusing more from, I have this workload, I cannot move the data out. You know, what's the best for me? Maybe I can put an abstraction layer, an API layer on top of that. I can run the compute closer to that. So those are the reasons that we are seeing, rather than I can't trust that. There is no FUD. There's less FUD there in the North America region. That's what I'm seeing at, right? Also, you know, another reason why you can call it more of a customer maturity. You can still see the maturity in terms of adoption is higher here rather than other regions, which is natural. If you see the customer adoption, like, we are focusing more on, I need to be as close to making money out of my application. I want to get down everything that is not going to help me make money, right? My application is what I want to focus on, and I don't care about the infrastructure. So there's a tons of players that are in that area, whether it's retails or not, or whatnot, large companies, whatnot. And they don't have to spend time or energy on running a private cloud infrastructure. And when people come to that maturity level, then there is lesser need for a private cloud, right? Not from a very high level statement, I need one, that's my empire, rather than saying I need a subset of my application really need to be local, and for that I need that. So it's the intent is different, the way that we see is different, and right now I'm seeing that customers here in the US are seeing it in that way, you know.
That makes sense.
One of you, if you disagree, yeah, or if you have a counter point.
Well, let me throw like a macro level contradiction at you then, okay?
Sure.
So there have been 6 AWS reinvents, and I've been to 5 of them. I suspect that you've been up to all 6 because I see you there every year.
A few of them. I missed the first 2, yeah.
So you might remember in years 1 through, I'm going to say 4, Werner Vogels would never say the phrase private cloud. Right, he wouldn't acknowledge that was a thing at all. Mm-hmm. Right, mm-hmm. But the last 2 years, he's talked about hybrid cloud and multi cloud, and I want to ask you about the nuance between those two definitions here in a minute. But so as like you could argue the most influential person in cloud has started to talk about the need for private cloud data centers, it sounds like you're saying your assertion has been, as he's been talking about it more, the actual need for it has decreased. So how do you reconcile those two things? It doesn't mean that they can't both go on at the same time, and it doesn't mean that he says things that he maybe doesn't necessarily believe, but those two things seem to be in conflict with me, and I wonder how you might reconcile that.
Sure. I don't see it as a more of a contradiction. I see that particularly Amazon recognizing private cloud, you can call it more like coming out of age, or if you can call it more like being enterprise friendly, right?
Yeah.
So the fact is enterprises have, they still have running things on data centers, right? Or local data centers, right?
Sure.
The recognition is that statement or that viewpoint is a recognition of the fact that enterprises are still having their stuff on data centers or private data centers. Now, Amazon needs to move them, or at least if you want to be successful, you need to find a better path to move those workloads or any new workloads they're going to build into the cloud. So that is the reason why, okay, we realize that now and we are there to help. So one of the things that we could do, we can send you a track to move the data out, right? That's kind of the point. That's the way I see that. The statement about private cloud is done. Like, think about new investments. Are they going to do that? Are they going to spend more energy on building new private cloud clusters? That's how you see that. They're not going to shut down. They haven't shut down. I'm not, just to be clearing on that one. They still have things running on what they have.
But you're talking about new investment.
Yes, new investments. Or even like, you know, trying to have a phased approach where they can phase it out rather than continuing to run that, right? That is what I'm saying. Where enterprises here are at. They had a strong reason, they had a strong need, or at least like, you know, they felt that they had a strong need to continue going that or keep building on that one. That need is more technical, right, though, rather than sentimental or, you know, or scare or whatnot.
Okay.
That's what I see that. Thank you for asking this question. It gave me a chance to explain myself clearly, but if it is still, you know, it's a contradiction, you know, we can go a layer deeper. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, as long as we're kind of in this private cloud area, what do you make of AWS's recent announcement that you can now run EC2 on Snowball Edge devices? And do you think, like I do, that will be among the major announcements in December, that you will be able to run EC2 on snowmobiles?
So, I'm not very good at predictions, but maybe not. But I won't be surprised if that is the case. In fact, when Snowball was looking at it about a year ago, it felt like a very good, really mini cloud, right? But I would think with less of a private cloud, more of an edge cloud rather than.
It's about the size of a roller suit.
Right. Plane, right.
I think you could literally put one in an overhead bin on an airplane.
Sure. Or you can carry on, right? But let's again go down to, you know, the reasons or intent behind it, right? There are going to be workloads. I'm hearing echo here. One of you, sorry. Yeah. There are going to be, as I said, there are certain workloads that need to be local, that need to be run local, whatnot, right? And they're not going to go away. Do you need a 1,000 node cluster for that? Do you need a huge private cloud for that? That's a difference, right? And this is not new. Like, Microsoft came up with Azure Stack, for example, right? And then we have Google Cloud announcing it. You are a GKE private. But those things are, again, I think if I understand correctly, they are more like suction into the public cloud. They want something in your home or in your site where we can suck the workload eventually to the public cloud. That's why I see those three announcements. Apart from recognizing the need for certain workloads at a very small scale to be run at the edge, right?
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. So you think they're creating a path to make it easier to move things to the public cloud?
Eventually, yes. Yes, Azure Stack. That's the way I see Azure Stack as, right? Because let's take back and see, you know, at least the last time I looked at Azure Stack, it is not meant to run hundreds of nodes or hundreds of whatnot, right? Enterprises are not going to have a data center with just 10 nodes, 12 node cluster. It's a starting point. But look at the Azure Stack experience. I can write an application on Azure Stack, and I don't have to do any code changes. I can take that, change my configuration file, and run it on any of my Azure public cloud regions, right? That's a perfect recipe for a hybrid cloud. I don't have to change my code at all. It's just the same code, and I'm happy. If I need a scale, I can move it out completely just by changing the endpoints. And that's a great hybrid cloud experience that Azure want to enable. But if you look at it, if I'm an enterprise, if I'm a financial company, if I'm a Citibank, whatnot, is my need going to be like just 10 cluster, 10 node cluster, 15 node cluster? No, it's not going to be. Right. But I can get started with it. I can keep things that really need to be local here. And if I need to move, I can move. Or I can have my bigger portfolio, larger portfolio. It's going to be same code base, same whatnot, configuration base, or however. I can use the same build pipeline. And things that need to stay local will stay local. Things that need to go public cloud will go to public cloud, all within same repository, same environment, whatnot, right? That's probably the I see is the best hybrid cloud experience that a service provider could provide.
Well, let me double click on some terms and definitions, like I warned you I would a minute ago, right? So, oftentimes we use the words the phrases multi cloud and hybrid cloud interchangeably. But do you see that as the technologies are advancing, there's a difference between the two, or what's your definition of those two terms?
Right. You know, I agree with that. There's been confusion everywhere, and I'm pretty sure that I'm not going to be able to clarify to everybody, right? But the way that I see that is, multi-cloud is not hybrid cloud. Let me step back and say why. Multi-cloud is generally like where you have multiple environments, or you leverage multiple environments, whether private cloud or public cloud, whether multiple regions or multiple cloud service providers. That's just basically saying that some of my workloads need to run local, they'll be running on my OpenStack cloud. Some of my workloads are containerized, or they'll be running on my Kubernetes cluster. And some of them might need to move to, you know, my GKE or my Kubernetes clusters on Amazon or whatnot. And some of them are just VM-based and they're going to run on Amazon Cloud, for example, AWS, for example, right? It's a hodgepodge of multiple clouds, but they're all independent entities. We are not talking about shifting them, moving them. We are not talking about one affecting. One can coexist. One might like call the APIs, for example, or whatnot, but they're all pretty much isolated.
Okay.
Right? That's where I see multi-cloud. It's like saying I use Office for my productivity application, but I have my iPod, for example, to listen to music or things like that, right? Whatever fits for my needs, I'm using it, but they both are not dependent. They might work together, but they are not dependent on each other. They're not going to mess with each other. There is very, very less interaction in the runtime between them. That's the way I see my multi-cloud. Hybrid cloud is very less use cases. Hybrid cloud is where like folks like Zynga attempted, right? I have something running in one environment, but when needed, I should be able to move it to a different environment. It's possible it could run on two different environments or more than one environment simultaneously. The reason why I'm not very very optimistic about that is like we still have latency issues. We still have getting something run on one environment is still an issue, right? No matter who it is, no matter what the platform is, at a large scale, getting things run, working seamlessly is a hard task. And if I have everything running on AWS, why or how easy is it for me to replicate that or move it to GCE, right? Let's not even think about multiple design patterns. Let's just talk about VM to VM, for example, or container to container, for example, right? Mm. It is still hard. It's not impossible, but it's still hard. And customers are not there yet. The expertise level, the understanding is not there yet. But if you ask me for definition, that's the way I see that. Will I use it? Will I recommend that? Very less, very, very, very specifically, I might. But overall, I would rather advise around multi-cloud under the same thing, best workload or right tool for the right job kind of paradigm, rather than I'm just trying to have it as more of a DR or a safety net or lock-in, right? Not for those reasons.
So you don't want to insist on that kind of dream everybody talks about, where you're able to kind of write once, deploy anywhere, and move things seamlessly back and forth between different clouds. You're just saying each one meets different needs.
Correct. I'm being more realistic and pragmatic here, and that's the way I see that. If you need it, definitely, right? Again, if there is a need for that, I haven't seen a big set of that needs. There's a very small set. In general, if you're trying to give a very high-level suggestion, I would just go with choose based on what is the right thing, right? That's what I would say.
That makes sense. Do you feel like there's do you feel like it's a problem that needs to be solved? So right now you're saying it's very difficult. It's difficult to move workloads and do these different things. Is it a problem that needs to be solved? Do we need to have a more seamless kind of hybrid cloud experience across all these? Or,
well, whether we need it or not, someone is going to do that as people have been doing it, right? Again, when cloud is like decades old, but we are talking about the same thing. How do I move to cloud? What do I need to migrate to cloud? Can you help me? I don't have expertise, right? while that is happening in one end, look at how fast that we have evolved. We kind of reinvented, containers were around for some time, but Docker came along and changed everything. Then while Docker is being, what containers have been like, containers and Kubernetes has been like, you know, creating revolutions, like serverless came along, and, you know, things like that keep happening. And there will always be like a catch-up game played between majority of customers, like always innovators or early adopters will sail through, but vast majority where there is money and where there is a lot of things need to be done, they're going to play catch-up. But to your question, if I'm a startup advisor, if I'm advising someone, you should do that, or are you going to do that, or should I do that? I would ask them, like, don't do that right now, because, you know, I don't see a real need for that, or what needs to be solved is much more rather than, you know, a cool idea that I would like to work on. But there will be a time that we will need it. By the time someone would have already worked on it, maybe.
All right, Pete, I'm sorry I interrupted your line of questioning.
No, it's okay.
I was wondering.
Well, I love that answer. And I think if there was such a thing as a cloud unfiltered podcast drinking game, it would be whenever someone uses the term serverless.
It would.
Since you just use the term serverless, ask you a question about that. So Serverless Conf took place recently, and I think this latest edition in San Francisco was notable by the fact that it was the first time theCUBE covered it.
Uh-huh.
And it was also the first time, you know, our Cloud Beers compatriot Adrian Cockcroft spoke at it.
Yep.
One of the things that always comes out of that, you know, they run that about 2 months, Serverless Conf, and you see this on Twitter all the time, is like this microservices versus serverless kind of banter that goes on. And I was wondering what your opinion of that is, like, because I think of that, I don't think it's an either or, but I think in many cases it's an and. I was wondering if you agree with that, or if you really think it's a us versus them mentality, the way that some people play it out.
And to add to that, like, you know, do we need containers for that? Do we need to have containers to do serverless? Like those are also always happening, right?
Yeah.
In very rarely, you know, not for this one. It's never like either or, right? Very rarely it's this or that, right? Mostly we are like, and we will use this and that, and right. There is, no matter what the community is, what the project is, there is always going to be us versus them. I have seen that in at least like two or three different communities now. And we tend to follow same patterns. We tend to make same mistakes. By we, I mean like, you know, communities. Certain extent, communities are, you know, becoming echo chambers and kind of, you know, it's not built yet. All these things happen, and this will keep happen. We will keep happening. Same thing is going to happen with serverless, right? Like, you know, container folks are very upset. They are like, why, you know, what is serverless? There's always going to be server state. That's all. You know, it's just a different paradigm, right? We need to. I would put customers first again, and then I'll go back to the what is the real need, right? And to answer your question specifically, I see serverless more as like event driven, and microservices more of a design architecture and a design paradigm but may or may not be event driven in terms of microservices. But oftentimes anything, right, that you write, and even base code that you write in the serverless environment, it will be a small service, it will be a microservice, right? Oftentimes in reality, otherwise it's not going to be very effective. But I want to, instead of focusing on the this or that as versus them or whatnot, I would like to use this opportunity to talk about what I see as a challenges with serverless, right? Yes, it's a design paradigm. You know, if you look at a differential steps, right, the way that I see that, we started with, you know, VMs, and then we talked about, you know, VM management layer. Then you came as a cloud management layer, if you want to call that private or public cloud. Then came along containers. Now we are at serverless, right? And we each of them had their own hype cycles. I expect the serverless to reach the hype cycle around 2021, 2022. But the common pattern around these things is like people need help. How we are making this adoption successful? What are the tools needed? What is the ecosystem around? What are the service providers around? You know, ultimately, even develop as a developer, if I need to write some code, what is the IDE for me? What is the workflow for me? Those things need to be taken care of, right? We have seen that support ecosystem is solid for cloud platforms, cloud service providers. That support system is relatively strong for Kubernetes and containers, but that support ecosystem is in early stages for serverless, right? Whether you're talking about debugging tools or talking about IDEs, you know, they are there. I'm not saying it's not there, but it will take a few years to get to a stage where as a developer, I have everything for me so that I can just focus on my application, write it, deploy it, manage it, whatnot, with at ease. So that will determine the success for serverless ecosystem, and we are not there yet. If you look at all the huge proponents, they all talk about how easy it is to get started. I don't disagree with that. I did a very cool app. You know, it was very easy for me to get started. Lambda will be even easier, but I started with Azure Functions, and you know, it was pretty straightforward for me. I didn't have to do anything. I got that. It's a very simple app, but it was pretty straightforward. But you know, how am I going to run a really complicated application, right? And not to forget that all these computer science graduates or all those programmers have been trained with like, you know, different kind of mindset, right? I've been like more of a, whether it's object-oriented programming, for example, or I'm trained in that one. I need to think differently. I need to think about event-driven programming. Do we have enough training for that? That is going to be another challenge, right? You know, those are the things will determine the success for serverless ecosystem. It will happen. It's never going to be this or that. It will be and. In a realistic deployment, we'll have all these things at various proportions. That's the way I see that.
That's interesting. Yeah. You brought up that bit about the developers because we had Robert Starmer on last week from Cumulus Technologies, and he said something similar that, you know, serverless is great, but some developers don't think that way. Depending on what their code specialty is, they don't think in functions or events, and it's not going to be as natural a move to them.
Right. I disagree with him on the some part, but rest of it, I agree. I think it's more, right? I love Robert. You know, we do also, like, he's also a new entrance to the Cloud Dosa gang, but I agree with him totally, right? I think it's cool. It is going to be the next step, or, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years from now, but it's going to take more effort. You know, there are companies, IOPipes is doing great thing. And then
I love those guys.
I'm trying to get another name based in Boston. They had a great demo of how to debug. Oh gosh, I'm forgetting their name. But it's okay. It'll come to me. Yeah. It's a Boston based startup on how to make debugging easier for serverless or microservices. So, you know, those things are happening. We will get there.
If I'm a cloud leader, a leader of an IT organization listening to this, what problem does serverless solve that isn't being solved right now by containers? Why would I want to point anyone in that direction in my organization?
Sure, that's true. And, you know, can I ask you back, like, what are you using containers for? Mm. Like, you know, if you can answer my, and then, you know, the other question is, it is, again, the approach that we most of us tend to take is, I have a solution. What is the problem? It's going to solve it for me, right? That is not the way I would like to see things.
Right. You want to hear the problem first.
Yes. I have a problem. What is the best solution for me, right? And, you know, some of the problems that, again, I need a faster start time. I need to focus on very small. I mean, those are very small functions. I'm more of event-driven. Those are the things that I would start with. And if I have that, I'll go to serverless. The most of the serverless hype is right now around, I don't have to worry about my infrastructure. I don't have to worry about my VM. I don't have to worry about my containers. I just write code. That's why it started, which is great. You know, we want to get there. You just focus on your code. The biggest driver had been like, you know, that is the closest that you can get to just focusing on code, right? Your application code, right? Even with containers, you still talk about some of the configurations, some of the, you know, your orchestrations, all those things.
You still got to build a Docker file.
Right. So, but with serverless, I just have to do that. But, you know, there will be some configuration. It's not going to be completely gone, but you are like probably 90% code and 10% configuration, right? Which is great. But am I there yet? Am I ready for that yet? I think those are the questions that I need to answer. So I would ask the executive to think about that. rather than, oh, I have serverless, like what else I can do, you know?
Right. No, that absolutely makes sense.
Correct. And just to add on to that one, right? I cannot, you know, if I take an ERP application and then I'm trying to make it microservices based, that's going to be a hell. That's going to be, I don't know if it's worth it, right?
Right.
I'm not sure if it's worth it. However, I might have some programming needs. The thing that we are looking at is like we are becoming, as a society, we are becoming more of interrupt driven. Like we have tons of interruptions happening. My SMS notifications coming up, my tweets is coming up. Like we are becoming more of that one, right? So anything that in that space that can, you know, grab my attention quickly and then give me something, you know, we are all used to push notifications. So if you're doing something in that, or if you have an application in that space, then serverless would be a good fit for me, good fit for you. I generally take a very, you know, again, I take it from problem first, then comes the solution. This answer may not be very accurate or very straightforward as you might have expected, but, you know, that's the way I see that.
No, that makes that does answer the question. That absolutely answers the question. Pete, I'll throw it back to you.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting close to the end of the time, so let me say I've been saving my one semi-controversial question that I might ask you.
Ooh, a controversial question.
I expect you to push or deny or just say no, but if you have been following sort of this cloud beers analyst space for a long time, you probably know that there's mystery surrounding the identity of who runs the cloud opinion Twitter handle.
Uh-huh.
So when I think it's someone at those cloud beers rooms. So as long as I got one of you guys in a recordable medium, uh-huh, I've got to ask you, Sriram, are you cloud opinion?
I neither confirm nor deny.
See, that's what I think happens. I think in reality, it's like four people, and as long as they all deny,
right?
You know, you get these denials, or you get these, well, I didn't write that tweet, which means, okay, it was one of the other four people that wrote that one, or.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just want to play along. I think most of us know who it is, but we just want to.
Well, I think I know who it was. I don't think I know who it is currently. So it's almost like, it's almost like, I mean, the best comic book example I can come up with off the top of my head is like Green Lantern isn't a guy, it's a job, right? And that different people keep getting that job of being the Green Lantern. So it's like, it's different people keep getting the job of being cloud opinion.
Either that or the person is trying to make us all believe that that is the case.
Okay, now that my brain is about to explode with that.
Right, the mastermind behind cloud beers has
been. I'm pretty sure you're the person, right?
Now you're making me wish I hadn't asked the question, which I think it's you all along.
You're diabolical. It's rare that we have a diabolical guest on, so I'm really happy about that.
But talking about cloud opinion, I know some of the things that you might have noticed, right? Very anti-OpenStack, and then what used to be more of an Amazon, now there's a shift towards Google or GCE or GKE. You know, it's an interesting path, and probably it's in a way, it's like kind of all of us, right? It's reflecting, the Parody account is really reflecting where the mind share is, or how we are evolving. I may not agree with some of the strong points against OpenStack, but, you know, overall, to an extent, it is not, if you think about it, you would have said the same thing.
Right.
Just ignoring the political comments or whatnot, some of the trivialized statement, but overall, the sentiment.
Yeah, I'm just going to have to go watch Inception to like calm my brain down behind the knot that it's currently in. So thanks for that.
Very good. So awesome. So, any more?
Yeah. Go ahead, gentlemen, we're out of time. And I hate to wrap it up because I have notes on other things I wanted to talk with you about.
Sure.
We didn't get to cover half of that, but I think we went down some interesting paths and definitely covered some interesting topics. So I thank you for your wisdom on those things, Sriram. It was definitely interesting to hear your point of view.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me here. I'm so glad. I'm thankful to Gary for referring me here. I'm pumped.
Sure, and you are absolutely winning the background child's artwork game.
Definitely. Oh, okay, great.
By a mile. We haven't had a guest that's even come close to that quality of artwork or that volume. So
the multicolored Seattle Seahawks logo over your right shoulder is pretty epic.
Thank you.
I just went, huh, he's in Seattle. I knew he was on the West Coast, but I see the Seahawks thing in the background there. Yeah. So if anybody wants to follow you on Twitter, Shriram, do you have a handle there that they can find you?
What is Twitter? I don't know.
You don't know? You've never heard of that sort of thing.
Shriram here. That's Shriram here is my logo, my handle. That's why I use it for mostly public, mostly work related, but some personal tweet too. So it's Shriram here.
Perfect.
Shriramhere.
I will include that in any promotion we do of this. Thank you so much for being on. Hopefully we'll have you on in the future and we can cover some of the topics we didn't get to cover.
That would be lovely. Thank you, Ali. Thank you, Pete. Hopefully see you soon in one of the conferences. I'm going to be at reInvent for sure. But
yeah, I got my ticket already. I will see you there.
See you there. Thank you. Bye, Ali. See you soon. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you. Bye-bye.